Parshas Vayelech, everyone. Perek Lamed Aleph Pasuk Tes Zayin. This pasuk says, "Vayomer Hashem Moshe." Hashem said to Moshe, "Hincha shochev imavosecha. Behold, you are about to die. You are about to lie together with your fathers. Vekom ha'omazeh. This nation will get up. This people will get up. Achor Eloheinu Haaretz. They'll follow the gods of the strangers of the land, the bad people. Ashru Bashama the Bikirbo that you are about to go into. Vazavani. They're going to forsake me. Vehefer is brisi asher karati to. They're going to get rid of the bris that I have made with them." Normally, when you use the phrase v'shochim imavosecha, when a person lies with their fathers, that refers to burial. That refers to someone being buried near your father, near your grandfather, because it just means you're going to be put together with them. Normally, that's what it would be over here. Yaakov Avinu had that. Yitzchak Avinu had that. They were buried with their fathers. Yitzchak Avinu Amaris Machpelah. Yaakov Avinu then Amaris Machpelah. And that makes a lot of sense. There's a few exceptions to that rule, and this pasuk is one of them. Because Moshe Rabbeinu was not buried with his fathers. There's no way he was buried with his fathers. And although in the Zohar it says that Moshe Rabbeinu being buried in his spot is ki'ilu he's buried in Maris Machpelah, and that there's a connection between where he was buried and Maris Machpelah, but in Pashup Shat, he was not buried with his fathers, and that's very, very strange. He wasn't buried with Amram. He wasn't buried with Yocheved. He was buried by himself in a cave that no one else had any sheikhs to. We don't even know where it is. So Targum Yonason says, in his Targum, he says that this is a hint to Moshe's neshama being placed in Olam Haba. That after Moshe Rabbeinu died, he went to Olam Haba. And this is a remez, he says, that when you sleep with your fathers, that means when you die, you will be with your fathers in Olam Haba. It's a promise that you and your parents and your grandparents are all in Gan Eden. You should know, by the way, the Targum Yonason itself says, number one, you'll be buried with your fathers, and then you're going to be with your fathers in Gan Eden. Strange wording, because we know he wasn't buried with his fathers. Targum Yonason adds on that line. But either way, this certainly should be able to be used to prove that there is a world to come. Meaning this pasuk is clear proof that in the Torah itself, we have a remez to the world to come, a hint to the world to come. Although the Torah and Tanakh doesn't speak about what happens to a person's neshama after death at all, we never talk about Gan Eden, we never talk about Gehenna. We talk about a guy Ben Hinnom, the valley of Ben Hinnom. We talk about this idea of what Gan Eden was before Adam Rishon. But we never speak about the idea in Torah Shebichsav of what's going to be the neshama after death, what happens to a person after death. But this seems to be a really good remez. When it says Shochim Ma'osecha, like it does here, like it says by Yishmael, like it says by a couple other people, it's a reference to what will be Olam Haba, that there is such a thing as Gan Eden itself. Not to Tchias Mesim yet, but to at least Olam Haba. The Rabbeinu Bechaya says, when Moshe Rabbeinu was told, Hein Korvi Yamach Lamus, you're going to die, he obviously, like anybody would be, he was extremely sad. He knew he had used the word Hein when he spoke to Adas Korach. He said, Hein, what's going on with you, B'nai Levi? Use that word when referencing B'nai Korach, saying, your people, you're not good enough for what you have. Why would you want more than what you have, B'nai Levi? And because of that, he was punished with the word Hein, and he was told, Hein, korvi yamech lamus. Your days are coming to die. This pasuk, says the Rabbeinu Bechaya, is this consolation. Hincha, it's your Hein. Shochev Yamosecha allows you to go to Olam Haba. Here's the idea behind it. Because we know Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't wrong. He saw what Ares Korach did, and he realized that Korach was wrong. And he went up to them, and he said exactly what he was supposed to say. Guys, you're wrong. Something's up. You've done something wrong when it comes to it. There's no question about that. He knew he had spoken harshly. He knew he was supposed to die. He knew that that was what was going to be. But nonetheless, he still spoke harshly. And when a person gives muster with that harsh added, that feeling to it, that little knockout punch of, Hein, what's wrong with you guys? Once you say something like that, for that reason, Moshe Rabbeinu had to die. There's a concept over here that because he did something wrong, he is going to be punished badly. But nonetheless, because his intentions were good, his kavanah was good, he ends up going to Olam Haba over here. And in fact, says Rabbeinu Bechaya, there were two promises given to him. Number one, he would go to the Olam HaNeshamos immediately after he dies. And number two, he would have Olam Haba and go to the Olam HaTchia, the world of Tchias HaMesim, and go after that. There's the Zman of Shochev, when you lie down with your fathers, and when your body is gone, your Neshama will be in the Olam HaNeshamos. and then become. You will get up by Tchiyas HaMeisim, and you will be up with your entire body, and you'll be there by the rest of Tchiyas HaMeisim. You should know, by the way, this Rabbeinu Bachai is the Ramban Lishita. So the Rabbeinu Bachai was a Talmud of the Ramban. There's Machlokas, Rambam, and Ramban, what happens to the soul after Misa, after death itself. According to the Ramban and the Rambam, which is explained by the Derech Hashem, right, by the Ramchal and his Sefer Derech Hashem, a person, after he dies, his neshama goes to this Olam, almost Olam and Neshamos, this area, it's almost like a waiting room, where the neshama is given power from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, from the Shekhinah itself, and grows and grows and grows and gets more and more and more powerful and builds itself up. And then only afterward, after everything happens to it, at the very, very end, then the Olam of Tchiyas HaMeisim happens, and the neshama rejoins the body in the ground itself. It reforms the body from the ground, and then there's Tchiyas HaMeisim. There's two parts. According to the Rambam, Olam HaTchiyah is after death, and there's somehow a connection between everything where it all happens together. Yemos HaMashiach is different, but Olam HaTchiyah is together with that. According to the Ramban, it seems there's two differences. There's the Olam Neshamos and everything else, and that's the concept, and it's learned from this pasuk, says the Rabbeinu Bachaya, that it says, Hincha Shochev Yimavasecha, that you're going to die, you'll be in the ground, and at that point, your Neshama will be in a higher spot, and then become. Afterward, you'll be able to get up and have this Tchiyas HaMeisim that you really need. There's a Yalkut Ruveni here that hints to all this through the Zohar, but this is what the Rabbeinu Bachaya says. The word that's used, kama amazet bizana, that it's going to go astray, is a weird word. The word zana obviously refers to znus. But that's strange because we're talking about acharei Elohei nechar haaretz. We're talking about Avodah Zarah. What is the word zana, which is znus, immoral behavior, what does that have anything to do with Avodah Zarah? So Rashi says in Divrei Yamin Beis, whenever someone leaves HaKadosh Baruch Hu to worship other gods, and I think we all get this, when a person goes somewhere else, it is always, it's never for intellectual pursuits, it's always for znus. If a person decides, I'm going to do Avodah Zarah, there is no question, there is something behind it you're doing that has znus involved. So when it says zana acharei Elohei nechar haaretz, it's because you wouldn't do this if not for this. The only reason why you get involved with this is because of that. The Vilna Gaon has a Kabbalah, a Mesorah, that he said comes from the Gaonim, which he felt came from a halacha l'Moshe Misina, that Moshe Rabbeinu came down from our Sinai and said, every bit of Avodah Zarah, in order to work, in order to convince its followers that there's something real behind it, must have znus. There has to be something involved with Gili Arias in order for it to work. You can make like jokes when it comes to this about, you know, like churches and stuff like that. I guess that would be the thing to do. But we don't do that sort of thing. So we're not going to do that. But when it comes to regular avodas, we can talk about Ovdei Avodah Zarah because you are allowed to be meilitz on them and you can say as much as you want. When it comes to regular Avodah Zarah, there's no question. In order to get followers, just to get followers to listen to this stupid little idol that you're worshiping on the side, you need znus. That znus has to be there. There has to be something there. The Ibn Ezra says it's a little bit more. He says even thinking that somebody wants to leave and worship something else, even thinking that way would be forbidden because it shows that his thoughts are not in the right place. In fact, I even skipped. There's a pasuk that we say every single day in our Kriya Shema. Acharei levavchem ve'acharei einechem. Asher atem zonim achareihem. Atem zonim achareihem, says the Gemara, is referring to hirhur avoda zara. You'd think asher atem zonim achareihem should be referring to Gili Arayos. But it's not. Atem zonim refers to avoda zara for this very reason, because they're together right over here. The Meshech Chochma says it's not talking about avoda zara at all. You're totally missing the shot behind the pasuk. The wording over here is like this. V'kama amazeh, after you die, Moshe Rabbeinu, these people will get up. Doesn't mean they're gods. They're going to turn after the women that are non-Jews in their land and marry them and be involved with them. The word zana is Arias because it is referring to Arias over here. It means something is going to happen within the realm of znus, not of Avodah Zarah. They're going to marry, intermarry with those nations that are living in Eretz Canaan. That's what's going to happen. And therefore, the word zana is appropriate. It refers to exactly what they were going to do over here. There is a Reb Hirsch over here, but I want to skip it for right now to get to this other Rabbeinu Bachaya. Rabbeinu Bachaya says there are certain malachim and kochavim that I think that we have to go into, and this is not really the place for it. There's really a pasuk in Devarim Vaschanan that goes in, Asher Cholak Lahem, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave them, so to speak, the powers of the kochavim, but this is how it works, and this is how the Rabbeinu Bachaya understands it. All the nations of the world are under a certain malach, kochav, a star, and a constellation. If the nation can figure out what malach it is that's in charge of them, meaning figure out the name, or the star, or the constellation that it is under, and pray to that kochav, or that constellation, or that malach that's in charge of them, they will be answered. Because that malach is in charge. It's the intermediary between them and God. So if they would pray directly to it, it would work. There's a power to that. The same way that magic works, the kishuf is there, and it has a power to it. There is something where if you use those dark arts, that dark magic, it will work. So too when it comes to this, non-Jews have the ability to get a hold of their malach, or their kochav, or their mazel, and they can get something straight from them. That's what the nations do when they get involved with Avodah Zarah. That's where almost all of it stems from. There's something to it. They have angels watching over. They really do have these angels that are there. The problem is that they should be praying to their God above and not anything more than that. It shouldn't be anything more than that. The only exception to this rule, the only time where this doesn't come into play is in Eretz Yisrael, says the Ravina Bachaya. Eretz Yisrael and Bnei Yisrael. Meaning, both of those, Eretz Yisrael and the people, Bnei Yisrael, are under the power of HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. And no other koach, no other power, no other being, nothing has the ability to overpower them. We have this concept called Ein Mazel LeYisrael. There is no mazel to Bnei Yisrael. And although that's true, says Rabbi Nochai, there is no mazel. There is something that affects us if we allow it to be under us. Meaning, there is mazel goreim. There's a Gemara in Yevamos, Daf Samach Daled Amud Beis, that says mazel goreim. We do say that certain things are under the mazel, like Bnei Chayi Umizoni. Are all under mazala talya mosa. Those are things that are under the mazel, so to speak. What it means is, you as a Jew have the ability to get over your mazel at any point. If you think you were born poor and you can't get out of it, you can if you daven and you become a brand new different person. You can change yourself from who you are. A Jew has the ability to be over all their mazel. A non-Jew in this way of looking at it, is limited that they're under their kochav, they're under their malach, what they decide, what they want, they can't go past, so to speak, their bubble. But us, we can get past that bubble. We can raise ourselves above all that, make ourselves more than all that, and make ourselves even greater. We are not subjugated to the mazel that we have. But if this is all true, the craziest thing that the Rabbeinu Bachaya seems to say is something that I never would have said in a billion years. The Rabbeinu Bachaya says, because of that, if the other nations are worshiping their gods and davening to their gods in Eretz Yisrael, that is a major problem. Because Eretz Yisrael is under God's jurisdiction and not under their mazalos. But outside of Eretz Yisrael, they would be allowed to do so. Do you hear this? They can daven to their mazel, or their kochav, or their sar, their malach. But only outside of Eretz Yisrael. Says the Ravina Bachaya, we only find that Hashem is makbid about those people worshipping idols in Eretz Yisrael, not outside. And therefore, if they would do that, they can. They're allowed to. Outside. But our land is special. Our land contains no malach or mazel. So bringing one in is a punishable offense. I don't know what that means, because we all know there are Shev Mitzvah Bnei Noach, and one of them is Ovdei Avodah Zarah. If a non-Jew is Ovdei Avodah Zarah, you're allowed to kill him. So why? How would that work? That's only in Eretz Yisrael, not outside of Eretz Yisrael, according to the Rabbeinu Bachaya? I mean, that's a massive chiddush, and it's not brought down by the Gemara or any other Rishonim that I know of aside from the Rabbeinu Bachaya. If somebody knows a raya for this, or if I'm reading this wrong, I don't think I'm reading it wrong, but that seems to be what the Rabbeinu Bachaya is saying. But that's an unbelievable raya, that non-Jews are only usher to worship. Again, their mazel, their kochav, whatever it is that's in charge of them. A regular Avodah Zarah, I guess, would be usher, like Baal Peor would be usher, or like Baal Tzifon would be usher. Like those things would be usher outside of Eretz Yisrael, because they're not their mazel. But if it would be something that's theirs, their kochav, their malach, their whatever's in charge of them, it should be fine. It's unreal, this Rabbeinu Bachaya. I've never heard of it before. The Talmudah says there's a serious implication to this. People go to Eretz Yisrael, and they think, I'll just be in Eretz Yisrael. And even if I sin, at least I'm living in Eretz Yisrael. Talmudah Rosh Sternbach says, Eretz Yisrael has no mazel, no malach, there's no blockage. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there directly. If you go to Eretz Yisrael and you do a sin, it's like you're sinning in God's palace. It's like you're going up to the king in his palace, where he has everything, and saying to him, I'm doing whatever I want. It's the worst place to have any sins. It's where Kadosh Baruch Hu has the least amount of patience, which tells you that when you look at, you don't want to say it because Eretz Yisrael, you don't want to say anything bad about Eretz Yisrael, but if there was a person that was doing something bad in Eretz Yisrael, you'd think they'd be punished immediately, and maybe they are. Maybe like 50 years, 60 years, 70 years is not enough. That's not considered immediate in a Kadosh Baruch Hu's mind. But it's scary. says the Talmud Asher of Sternbach, that is a serious implication. Even people that are doing mitzvos and following and going to yeshiva, but doing one thing, you have to worry about it because it's directly under God's jurisdiction. It's His palace, so to speak. I will end that the Rabbeinu Ephraim, based on this idea, but not exactly, says that he heard from Rabbeinu Tam, that he had asked the Balach Alon, the angel of dreams. He quotes it either as Raziel HaMalach or possibly Gavriel, if Yeshu and his mother are hinted to in the Torah. He said, are Yeshu and his mother hinted to in the Torah? And the Malach, the Balach Alon answered him this pasuk, Elohei Nechar Haaretz, the gods of the strangers of the land, is the gematria of 612. Just that, by the way, is interesting. That's 612, which is the same as Yeshu u'Miriam. Yeshu and Mary, right? That's where he comes out from. Maybe all these psukim are referring to how he attained his followers and how he got his following, starting in Eretz Yisrael and then building out outward. I have absolutely no idea. But the Rabbeinu Ephraim brings that down, that it's learned out from over here. There's another thing, and I'm sure everybody knows this Gemara. Maybe not this one. The Gemara in Yuma, Nun Beis Mabeis, says, Isi ben Yehuda says, this is one of the five or six psukim, depends on the girsa of the Gemara, five or six psukim in Torah, she'en la machreya. You don't know how to read it. The word v'kam could be read in two different ways, he says. It could be read as, Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, hin choshovech amosecha, you're going to die, kama, v'kama amazeh, and the people will get up and they'll stray after the other gods. But there's another way of reading it. Hin choshovech v'mavosecha, v'kam. You're going to die, and you're going to get up for Tchias Amazon. That's another way of reading it. In seemingly Sanhedrin, Sadiyam Abayz, the Romans went up to Rabbi Yoshua ben Chananya. Rabbi Yoshua ben Chananya was well known for his fights against the adversaries. Most likely, the reason why, Rabbi Yoshua ben Chananya was extremely good friends with Hadrian, the famous emperor that was there that unfortunately squashed the Bar Kokhba rebellion and eventually killed Rabbi Akiva as well as other Chachamim, the Asarugi Malchus. The king before Trajan, that's the king that everybody knows the story of Nachomish Gamzu, you know, when he bought him he brought him the dirt instead of the gold and everything like that. That was Trajan. By Hadrian, when Hadrian came around, that was the person, he was best friends with Rabbi Yoshua ben Chananya, best friends, and he brought in Rabbi Yoshua the whole time. When Rabbi Yoshua died, after asking him tons of questions, you can see in the Gemara, there are probably 9 or 10 Gemaras that deal with questions that the Roman emperor, the Caesar, asked Rabbi Yoshua. They're all dealing with Hadrian and his daughter and Hadrian's followers, etc. Rabbi Yoshua is good friends with them. The Romans asked Rabbi Yoshua ben Chananya this question at Sadiyam Abayz, how do you know there is such a thing as Tchias Mesim in the Torah? And how do you know God knows the future? How can you tell both things? And he used this pasuk to answer them. And he said, they come. You're going to die, and then you're going to get up. That's Tchias Amesim. They said, maybe it's Vekama Amazeh. Maybe the people will get up. Vizanach Ho'elim Acherim. So he said, good. So now you know the other half. God knows the future. That the people are going to get up, and they're going to stray after idols after Moshe Rabbeinu dies. So either way, you got it. Either the Vekama is going on the first part, and it means Tchias Amesim, or it's going on the second part, and it's referring to God knowing the future. That's what Rabbi Yeshua told them. That's the end of the Gemara. I don't know if the Romans were convinced, but they got it from that pasuk. He got it from this pasuk, and he said it from right over here. The Ibn Ezra says, I don't understand the drush at all. He's not arguing on the medrash. There's obviously a Gemara that says that the Kama Azeh could refer to the first part, but he says it doesn't make any sense. Read the rest of the pasuk. If you read it as, you're going to die, and you're going to get up. The rest of the pasuk says, Ha'om Azeh v'zona achare Eloheich nechar ha'aretz. Ha'om Azeh doesn't make any sense. It should be, v'ha'om Azeh zona achare Eloheich nechar ha'aretz. The vav is in the wrong place. He said, there's something wrong. It's clear that it's supposed to be v'kam ha'om mazeh v'zonach ha'elohei nechar ha'aretz. There's something wrong over here. Torah Tmima says, that's not what you do. Does anybody know a Gemara where you have to double up a word in order to darshan the pasuk properly? There are a few Gemaras like this. A few Gemaras where you have to double up the word, where you say one word here and you just say the word again in order to apply the next way. Like by Ribbis. If anybody's done Ezu Neshech in the fifth parak above Metzia, right? If anybody's done it, the way we know that ribis kesef and ribis ochel works is that you read the word ribis twice. Once by kesef and once by ochel. Even though it only says it once in the pasuk, it's as if it's read twice in the pasuk itself. So too, you can have it. Where's the other one? He said, Yuma lamed aleph mabez, Yom Kippur time. The Kohanim have to wash their hands. It says the word varachatz once. But Chazal Darshan, they have to wash their hands before changing their clothes and then after they're changing their clothes. How do we know that? It says as if it says the word Barachatz twice. It says if it says it in two different places, before and after. It doesn't say it twice, but it's as if. So to what we hear says the Torah to me, Rabbi Baruch Epstein, He says, the son of the Aruch HaShulchan, he says it's the same exact thing over here. The Kama Mazeh, you read the word become twice. It says, Shikha Shokhim Mazecha become, you're going to die, and then you're going to have Tchiyas Mesim. Become Amazeh, and then the people get up. It's not like it's only one here and one there. It's used twice as if it's in both places over here. The Kliyakar also goes on, he has another thing over here where he says, the Drush is as if it reads as Yakum. It's really a scary thing. If a Talmud quotes a Rebbe, and the Rebbe is already dead, we have a concept called Sifasayim Dovavos Bakever. You ever heard that phrase? The lips move in the grave. That if you quote your Rebbe after your Rebbe has passed away, then the lips of the Rebbe move as if he's saying the drasha that you're saying at that moment. His lips are actually moving, says the Kliyakar. But it doesn't just go like that. You ever heard the phrase, he's rolling over in his grave? That's a famous phrase, right? The concept, says the Kliyakar, is the exact opposite as well. When a person says something amazing from his Rebbe, then everybody looks at the Talmud and says, wow, your Rebbe must have been amazing. If you're this good, I can't imagine what your Rebbe was like. And they praise the Rebbe to high heaven, and the Rebbe literally gets schar from it and goes up levels in Gan Eden by getting that praise through the Talmud. It goes through the Talmud, but he gets it. That's the idea of Sifasos of Dovos Bekever. It's as if he's moving, he's talking while in the Kever itself. But unfortunately, the opposite is true. If the Talmud doesn't act properly, people curse out the Rebbe and says, how can a person have a Talmud like that? He must have been a horrible Rebbe. And when the Rebbe passes away, when a Talmud acts that way, then the Rebbe himself ends up rolling around and is uncomfortable in his grave. Uncomfortable. It's as if he's moving around in such a way. Moshe Rabbeinu hoped that he was going to die in peace. Hincha shochev yamavusecha, he was told. You're going to die and you're going to be buried in the ground. But he's vikum. He's going to get up. He's going to move around. Why? Because vikum amazev is anachar Elohim echar arts. Because the people are going to be straying after other idols. Moshe Rabbeinu was told that this is the idea. It's a warning that he had to tell them again and again, don't do this. Because it's not only affecting you and your neshamas, it's affecting me. I'm being affected by this. Not because the body literally gets up and moves, but there's something that the body feels of any. A Rebbe is like that when it comes through. I do want to point out a timeout. There is a mimer in Sota Yugimol Beis that says that Moshe Rabbeinu was Omin Mishamash Barom and he never died in the first place. The Moshe Rabbeinu was still up in the heavens. It's Ki'ilu, he never died. And that even though it says that he was placed in the mountain, whatever, and he's put inside a cave, that he's not really dead and he's considered alive and therefore he's still davening for us, he's still around, so it's not like he actually gets affected by it. But nonetheless, the concept says the Kliyakar is still there, that when a person has that, that is what can happen when it comes down to it. So that was that, yeah. What do you have?
Should this concept only apply after you die? Couldn't a person equally say these things?
Yeah, I think it for sure happens. When the Rebbe is alive, though, the Rebbe actually feels it. Like, people will go up and say, like, you taught that Talmud? How in the world can you teach that Talmud? And that the Rebbe feels that. Like, I know how good that Talmud is, and I know that there is something that's bothering him and something happened, but I know he's a great person at heart, and I feel horrible about that. But it makes the Rebbe feel like garbage when that happens, when something like that happens. I think that's 100% true. Maybe it's even once a person puts all their kochos, like, if I would put all my koach into one person, and then I see that he's not following whatsoever, I'm obviously going to feel upset. Right? I'll try not to show it on the outside. I'll try to show on the outside that I still love the person for who he is. But on the outside, on the inside, it's just sort of like, oh my gosh, what did I do wrong? What could I have done better to make sure that guy is there? And I still feel that way about many of my old Talmidim, that I wish I would have done more or better with them, something more, in order to help them. But I think that's part of life. There's two other good pieces over here from Nimiam Loez and Rechaim Knievsky and Tami Dekra that are both amazing. I don't think we're going to have any time for it. The Chassam Sofer says in the name of his Rebbe, Rav Nosson Adler, as a timeout, Rav Nosson Adler was a massive Mekobel. His Rebbe, Rav Nosson Adler, Yitu Rebbeim, the Chassam Sofer, the Hafla and Rav Nosson Adler. He mostly learned by Rav Nosson Adler. He went to him, he was, I think, 9 years old, maybe 10. He was a bigger kid for his age. But he had his bar mitzvah, Rav Nosson Adler. Rav Nosson Adler wouldn't allow him to go home. A whole long story about him with his father. He felt that his growth in Torah, Rav Nosson Adler told his father, I'm making him into a gadol bador. If I send him to you, he won't be the gadol bador. It's an unbelievable line. I can't even imagine saying that to somebody. I can. But nonetheless, Rav Nosson Adler said that about the Chassam Sofer. And Rav Nosson Adler was an unreal tzaddik. We don't have any writings from him. Only what we have from the Chassam Sofer. And the Chassam Sofer writes a ton about Rav Nosson Adler. Writes a ton anyway, but a ton of it is about him. Listen to this idea that Rav Nosson Adler says. There's a machlokis of opinion if Dor HaMidbar is a chelik in Olam Haba. Dor HaMidbar means those people that were under Moshe Rabbeinu that left Harsin, that left Mitzrayim and were by Matan Torah, if they have a chelik in Olam Haba or not. The Mishnah says they have no chelik in Olam Haba. It's either Reb Yudah Besir or Reb Yudah Bava. I can't remember and I forgot to look it up. It's Reb Yudah Ben, probably Beseira, says they do have a chelik in Olam Haba. Something is with them. It might even be Reb Eliezer, I don't remember. But they say they do have a chelik in Olam Haba. There is a chelik for them. And it's all based on the line that we say every Friday night. Asher nishbati biapi, I swore in my anger, imivouna menuchasi, if they will come into my resting place. I swore in my anger, they'll never come to my resting place, they'll never get Olam Haba. That might be referring to Dor HaMidbar. As a side note, by the way, when you're reading Friday night, Kabbalah Shabbos, I've always found it to be one of the strangest things of when people go through it, right? Arboim Shana Kud Bedor, right? And we're singing it. For 40 years, I argued with the nation, Kud Bedor, V'amar Amtuelev of Haim, right? V'amar Amtuelev of Haim. And I said, they are a mistaken people. V'heim l'yodud v'rachoy, and they never knew my ways. Asher nishbati v'yapi, I swore in my anger. Im yivona menuchasi, they will never go to Olam Haba. Shiru l'Hashem. Isn't that strange? Does anybody have any idea what they're saying? Like, does anybody read the English? It's really, really strange. I don't know. Maybe Rabbi Karlbach had an idea behind what he was doing with the tunes that he was using for that. It seems a little too happy-go-lucky for me to be able to say these words and then go through. But this is literally the pasuk that we use to say that Dor HaMidbar has no chelik in Olam Haba. The argument is maybe there's something later. Says Rav Nassim Adler, based on this pasuk, it's all on Moshe Rabbeinu. It's all on Moshe Rabbeinu. If Moshe Rabbeinu goes into Eretz Yisrael alive, if he goes into it alive, the Beis HaMikdash is going to come down. Bnei Yisrael will be on an unbelievably high level. Everybody will be on a high level. And at that moment, Dor HaMidbar will be looked at askance. They'll look at Dor HaMidbar and say, what were you thinking? You got the Torah and you were that bad? How could you have done that? For that reason, if Moshe goes into Eretz Yisrael and everything else happens, no chelik in Olam Haba for them. They don't get a chelik in Olam Haba. But on the other hand, if Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't go to Eretz Yisrael, if Moshe Rabbeinu dies, then the first Beis HaMikdash is not going to be a perfect Beis HaMikdash. The people are going to sin, even when they see HaKadosh Baruch Hu with their own eyes. They see miracles every day in the Beis HaMikdash, and they're still sinning. Dor HaMidbar doesn't look so bad anymore. Dor HaMidbar doesn't look as bad. So just like those people of Olam Haba, Dor HaMidbar will get Olam Haba as well. In fact, the Arizal says that Dor HaMidbar was misgalgal into the Dor HaChorban, the generation of the Chorban Beis HaMikdash. Here's the line. Hincha shochei v'mavosecha. Moshe, if you die, and you will, you're going to die, therefore, v'kam amazeh. This nation that was buried with you will get up and have tchiyas amazim. Isn't that amazing? V'kam is not referring to Moshe Rabbeinu like we've been saying up until now. It's referring to the nation, says Rav Nassim Adler. The nation will be able to get up. Why? Because the rest of the people, zana acharei Elohim echaretz. Because the rest of the people are straying after strange gods. Because they did that, the Dor HaMidbar doesn't look as bad, and then all of a sudden they get a chelik in Olam Haba. Is that an unbelievable pshat? It's really a crazy pshat. There's a malbim here as well, but I'm not going to go into it. So how did it happen? How did Bnei Yisrael sin so badly when they went through over here? Miam Loei says, I think this is obvious for most people. You see something bad happen to somebody that you never expected anything bad to happen to. You see a chassid, a great, great, great tzaddik, and you're like, no way that guy ever sinned enough to deserve the punishments that he had. I learned by Rav Nassim Tzvi Finkel for years. I was able to learn with him as close as you can get. And I saw him. The man is an unreal tzaddik, and yet he was struck with Yisurin for what, 20 years? I think it was 25 years altogether? For what? For what reason? So I can see a person saying, if that person, if even he can get Yisurin, then anybody. There's no din, no dying in the world. I don't believe that, right? But I can hear how a person could make that mistake, an Eov type of mistake. And you never blame a person in their tzaras or in their Yisurin for anything they decide or anything that happens to them. They decided because something that happened to them that I can't understand. Just like you never judge a person on his pain. When a person says, I'm in pain, you have to accept it for what it is. Even though I don't think he's in pain, but he's saying he's in pain. It's the same thing when it comes down to this. If he's saying, I don't understand it, says to me, I'm Lois, the reaction they had when they saw Moshe Rabbeinu die was extremely negative. These were people who grew up seeing Moshe Rabbeinu as a god, lowercase g, but seeing him as a person whose face was so shiny, he had to cover it with a mask. to see a person who literally did nothing but learn all day long. They didn't have the Torah in front of them. They had no idea that the reason why Moshe Rabbeinu died is because of Mei Meriva, because he hit the rock instead of speaking to the rock. All they saw was Moshe Rabbeinu hit the rock, water come forth, and then Moshe Rabbeinu says, all right, I'm out. I'm going to die now. And they looked at it. They said, why? Why would you die over anything else? Esav did this by Avram Avinu. When Avram Avinu passed away, he said, a person like Avram Avinu should die? How could it be? And on that day, he went off the derech because he saw something that didn't make any sense to him. So he said, I'm out. I don't. This doesn't make any sense to me. Says to me, I'm always, that's what happened to Klal Yisrael. Because Moshe Rabbeinu died, v'zonach re'alei nechar aretz. Now, time out. They didn't. Yoshua was so great. We forget how awesome Yoshua was for the next 22 odd years. When Yoshua was alive leading the nation, nobody did anything wrong. Nobody went off. It's only after Yoshua died and the Zakenim that died after him that people started straying. But Yoshua was such a moon reflecting Moshe Rabbeinu's greatness. Nobody went off during that time. So even though Hashem said, "V'zonach ve'elohi nechar aretz," it's when you really die, Moshe Rabbeinu, which means when your Talmud dies. When Yoshua died, that's when it all happened. It happened after that. The Baal HaTurim says, there is a crown on top of the kuf. Normally, there's no crown on top of kufs. Shatnaz gates. Shatnaz Geis, Shin, Ayin, Tes, Nun, Zayin, Gimel, Tzadi have crowns on top of them. But not a kuf. But this kuf, where it says Vikum, has a crown on top of it. There's a three-pronged crown on top of that kuf itself. That's what's supposed to be in the Torah. It is a crown on top of there to refer to what they did wrong. At some point, they stopped making 100 brachos a day. The kuf is the 100 brachos a day. David HaMelech instituted 100 brachos a day because people were dying. People weren't doing things right, so he said, everybody should make 100 brachos a day, and we get to do that. On most days, without even trying, if you daven, you will do 92 brachos a day. Without trying, davening, Shacharis Mincha Maariv will give you 92 brachos a day without any problem. You add on one time where you bench, you wash, hamotzi, and then bench, that's 6 brachos right there, that's 98. Then you have to go to the bathroom twice, remember to say an Asher Yatzer, and you're good. On most days, you have no problem. On Shabbos, you might have to add on a little bit. Yom Kippur coming up, you got to do besamim. You got to go to the bathroom a bunch of times. It's difficult. Even if you have in mind every Haftorah bracha, every bracha from the Torah reading, you're still going to get up to something like 89, something like that, if you add on everything. So Yom Kippur is a very difficult one. But to do 100 brachos a day is such a tikkun for everybody's soul, that getting those 100 brachos down, when they didn't do it, that caused the people to go astray. It caused them to have a little bit of weakness that brought them down a little bit. There's an amazing Yalka Ruveni here. There's another Baal HaTurim over here. We don't have time for it. I will say, there's a question of when this happened. Times of Menashe, by Yeravam. There's a Rokeach here in Emes Shachachma as well. I only have 7 minutes. There's an Or HaChaim over here that's absolutely unbelievable. The Netziv. All right, two Mishalim. It's not so appropriate. All right, check out the Netziv. It's an awesome one. I will just say that. He talks about, you can read it for those who have it in front of them. But the Netziv is absolutely amazing. It's literally one of the most unbelievable Netzivs I've seen in a long, long time. The Chassam Sofer wonders why these psukim refer to Moshe Rabbeinu Tzchias Mason. Why here? Why would it refer to it here? All of a sudden, Achrei Elohei Nechar Aretz V'kama Amazed, that's where you're going to write about it? You're going to say it here? Talk about Moshe Rabbeinu Tzchias Mason in Zosa Bracha. Talk about it where he talks about his own death, right, in Devarim, where he says he's going to die. I don't understand why it has to be that it has to be over here, right, when we talk about the Tzchias Mason. That's number one. Number two, the Ramban says, if you look later on in the Pesukim, it seems that Bnei Yisrael blamed themselves for something bad that happened. They said, it's our fault. Ki ein Elohai bekirbi. God is not with me because I'm not working on myself, and therefore it's my fault. And right after that, Vanochi hastir astiras panai mehem. I'm going to hide my face from them. Wait a second. They just did tshuva. Why in the world would God then hide his face from them? That's the Ramban's kasha. The Ramban answers in his own way. Says the Chassam Sofer, take those two questions, and he says, there is an unbelievable pshat here. He goes through and he says a bit of an introduction. He says, these psukim are referring to the time between Churban Bayis Rishon and Binyan Bayis Sheni. There were 70 years between Churban Bayis Rishon and the building of the second Beis Hamikdash. Obviously, what happened that was the most famous during that time between Churban Bayis Rishon and the building of Bayis Sheni? The story of Purim. Good. If somebody would have said Daniel or Hanani Mishael Vazari, I would have been like, that's amazing. You knew that. That was good. But also, Purim. Purim happened. How were we saved during Purim? From Esther. Esther Amalka. We learn Esther Mina Torah Minayin. It's a Gemara Chulin Kuflam Etzasim Aves. Esther Mina Torah Minayin. Where is Esther in the Torah? Vanochi Hastiris astir panai mehem. I hid my face from Bnei Yisrael. It says the time of Purim, God gave the Jews a Yeshua, but it happened through Hester Panim. The reason why? The generation missed out on something huge. Although the Yeshua could have been done through so many people. Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, Chagai, Zechariah, Malachi. Yirmiah was around. Yechezkel was around. Baruch ben Neriah, Ezra, Sofer, Nehemiah, Zerubbabel, Daniel. All these people around. Mordechai. You have all these people that were unreal people. Unbelievable tzaddikim. Tzaddikim of such a high caliber. Of the highest of calibers. The miracle could happen through any of them. And the miracle didn't happen through them. It happened through Esther. Why did it happen through Esther? Because the Kadosh Baruch Hu was showing them it's going to be through Hester Panim. Hester Panim means Hashem is Kilu hiding his face, giving them a Yeshua, but it's not outright. It's hidden. It's a hidden Yeshua that's going to be the other way around. Even the Malach that was sent to them is a Malach that's known as a Kasri. He's mentioned one time in Shas, in Brachos Dav Zayin Amid Aleph, that when a Kohen Gadol went into the Beis HaMikdash, he saw a Malach inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Everybody asked, but nothing can be inside there. But the Malach's name was Akasri, with the last El Aleph Lamed at the very end. This Malach, Akasri Kel, is the same gematria as Esther. It's off by one, but that's because the Aleph in the beginning, there's a whole other Chassam Sofer on this. It's Yoshev B'Seser Elyon, right? That Yoshev B'Seser Elyon is a remez to this Malach Akasri. It's an amazing, amazing idea. But this entire Yeshua happened through Esther Panim. Says the Chassam Sofer, read these psukim, and it all refers to this. It says the following. There will be a time when our enemies are going to look for a month where Moshe Rabbeinu died, and that's Zayin Adar. Hincha shochevim avosecha, you're going to die. And that month where you're going to die is going to be the month that they're going to want their lottery to fall out on. That's the time where they're going to try to destroy the Jews. But they don't know that that's also the day that Moshe Rabbeinu was born, the come. He also got up on that day, but they didn't realize that. The reason the enemy will be able to do so is for two reasons. Number one, Bnei Yisrael bowed down to the Avodah Zarah of Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar made a statue, a tselem, and all the Jews bowed down to it except for three people, or the three people. No. Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah. Mordechai wasn't there because he was already in Shushan. But Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah didn't bow down, and for that reason, what happened to them? They were thrown into the fire, right? But every other person in Bnei Yisrael bowed down to the idol. Zona achare Elohei nechara aretz. They strayed after the non-Jewish gods. They bow down to that tselem. Where? In the land Asherhu Bashama Bikirbo. The land that they were brought into in the land of Babel. They were brought into Babel after the Churban, and there they bow down to this tselem. Because they did that, the chara api bo bayomu. I got angry at them at that time, and they deserved to be punished. But I pushed off a little bit. I didn't want them to be punished immediately, because Bando and Etzelam, I gave them a little bit of rachamim. But then, they did a second sin. V'hayala echol. They sat down to eat at the Suda of Achashverosh. When they sat down to eat at the Suda of Achashverosh, Hashem said, I'm not waiting anymore. Now I'm not waiting anymore. Now I'm going to destroy them at this point. That it compounded their Avera. They bowed down to the Tzelam of Nebuchadnezzar. They also ate at the Suda of Achashverosh. Yimtzu roos rabos v'tzaros. Now the most horrible things are going to happen to them. Roos rabos tzaros. Rosh Hatevis, reish reish tzadi. The tzorer hayehudim, the enemy of the Jews. The only time the word tzorer is used in all of Tanakh is by Haman. So roos rabos v'tzaros, says the Chassam Sofer, refers to Haman, the tzorer hayehudim. They should have done tshuva immediately on both. On the Tselem and on the Suda. And Mordechai got up and told them, guys, do tshuva. And they did do tshuva. They did. But they only did tshuva for what they had ate. Al kien Elohai b'kirbi. God's not in my stomach, meaning I ate something that was improper, and that's the reason why I'm being punished. They did tshuva for the food that they ate improperly, but they didn't do tshuva for bowing down to the Tselem. They said, this is why the evil was happening, because we didn't eat, but they didn't do tshuva for the other. So Hashem agreed to save them. But because they didn't do tshuva for bowing down to the tzelem, they only did tshuva for eating bad things, therefore, they didn't have gilui shechina. They had Hester Panim. Vanochi haster astiras panai mehem. I'm going to hide my face from them through Esther or the Malach, and because they only had one sin left, kifana Elohim acherim, because they still bow down to the other gods. That's the only reason left. The whole list of psukim from the beginning to the end is all referring to this idea of what happened in between Churban Bayis Rishon and Binyan Bayis Sheni and how they were saved. And it seems to be, to me at least, to be straight out from the psukim themselves. It's an amazing Chassam Sofer. An amazing Chassam Sofer. I haven't seen Ramazan like that since the Ben Ish Chai. The Ben Ish Chai does Ramazan like this. But the basic idea is, we learn from this word become, especially from the Rabbeinu Bechaya, the idea of Tchiyas HaMeisim and what's going to be in the future. We had this idea that was brought down in different ways, however the Neshama is going to be saved. And eventually we got to the idea of how this refers to, what's going to be how people went off, and that Remez from the Chasam Sofer. Have a good Shabbos, everyone.